Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to today's call. And on the line we have Naoki, Jim, Dennis, Nishit, Takao, and myself, Steve from staff. Did I miss anybody?
The operator to start the recording.
Yes. Operator, could you start the recording?
The recording is on.
Okay, thank you. Okay, over to you, Jim.
Okay. First thing I want to do is thank Steve. I think he really has brought the document along here over the past week. So I think we're starting to look pretty good here. I'm actually pleased with the direction we're going in. So I just want to comment on that overall. A couple of people have already commented on the list and made some updates to the documents, and all of that is good. We don't have Jody with us.
I'm here, Steve.
Oh, all right. Jody.
I'm sorry, Jim. I'm here.
Okay.
Good. Jody, I had sent a note at one point. You said you made some changes to the document, but I didn't see a copy of the document.
Did I not attach it? It was only editorial stuff. I'll resend it. Sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine. It's also giving the opportunity for anyone else to jump in and suggest that they got it, and my email had its problems too. But so all of that's good. I think we have a nice document from Steve, and he'll fold in all the comments that we are getting from people. I did have one comment. Suggestion that I made in the version that I had sent out a little while ago that I thought was kind of substantive and that we should talk about. But before we jump to that, thought I'd give the opportunity for anyone else who would like to jump in, and do you have any other additional comments that you want to make about the documents, anyone?
Hi, this is Nishit.
Please, Nishit, go ahead.
Okay, so I have some of the questions and comments regarding this report. First of this is under the category section, I can see a new category that added, which is languages. So I'm really unaware of that, what all of the data elements that come under this category.
Nishit, it's hard to hear from you.
Yeah, I was having trouble understanding you too, Nishit. Maybe could you try again? Or let me ask first, did anyone else feel like they could repeat what Nishit said? So I'm sorry, could we ask you to
repeat
again, Nishit?
Sure, I'll repeat my question. I want to comment on this report. I have some of the questions regarding it. My first question is that under category section, where we have listed all of the 13 categories, I can see a new category added to it, which is languages. So what I need to ask, what all data elements come under this category?
Yes. This is Steve. If I understand your question, what you're saying is regarding the categories, let me scroll that down here. There is a category for languages. That's what your question on this?
Exactly.
Yes.
So what all are the data elements that come?
Is that right? What I'm looking through, so when I look through the, if I scroll down towards the end, when Takao did the comparison with the EWG data elements, so added a few of them here, registrar, jurisdiction, and then there is this, you know, another field called registration, registrar agreement language. So I thought maybe, you know, this is an area that we have not really talked too much about. So what I did is I put a language category up there, but I haven't really done anything just to document that. This is an action item, I think, for the working group to determine whether there's a need to add that category, and if so, what are the requirements for that? So does that answer your question?
Exactly. Does it refer to the domain language as a data element under dot set registry that I can see in the down data field?
Sorry, I'm not able to hear very clearly. Does anyone else can repeat Anish's question? Or Anish, perhaps you could type it in the chat, so that will be easier.
Sure.
I don't want to answer this question. Very good question.
Okay, while Nisha types his question in the chat room, does anyone else have any comments or questions about the documents they'd like to jump to?
I have unsynced the document in the Adobe Connect, so you can scroll it by yourself to different sections, and feel free to do that. So Nisha's question, does the language cater to domain language data element under .cat registry? I am actually not sure what the domain language data element the .cat registry refers to. So those data elements are just for kind of an inventory. We don't try to do like a one-by-one mapping, if you will. But if anybody knows more about that, you know, please chime in here.
Yeah, so this is Jim. My question to Nishit would be, is the CAT TLD doing something special with their language data element that you're concerned about? I mean, I would hope they're using it in sort of a typical or expected way, but please go ahead.
See, I saw this different category get added to the list of categories, which is languages. So I'm just asking why this particular category gets added. Is it because that domain language data element, which is under the dot set registry, it has to do something with that?
Okay, so I'm still having trouble understanding you, Nishit, but it sounds like you're asking, I think, if there is any difference between what they're doing and what we're doing. And I agree with you that that's something, I mean, if that's your question, yes, we should figure out if there is a discrepancy or not here. In fact, Steve, in general, when we post this interim report,
yes.
and we're asking the community for comments,
mm-hmm.
We should ask in general for people who read it to consider if we have used or defined any data elements in a manner that's inconsistent with known usage.
Okay.
That would be a good question to ask in general.
Ask in general if we have used these data elements or defined the categories consistent with current usage?
Yes.
Okay. So that will be part of a, that will be part, a section or in the beginning of the report where we pose a few questions for the community. That seems right.
Yeah, I guess I leave the forum to you. Would it be something we would put in the report, or is it something that's put in the announcement?
I would think both.
Okay. That's
read the announcement and pass, and some people go directly into the report, so it's good to have it both places.
Okay, sounds good to me. So, Nishit, I'm sorry, but so have we covered your question, or did you have another question?
Yes, my second comment is on that under 5.1.1.5 under the proposed requirement header, it is specified that users should be able to input this particular all the data elements under this category in a language or a script appropriate for the region that it is located. So here, do we need to clarify that how this restriction on inputting in particular language or script will be made in its region? Or in other way, it should be written like it should be that user should be able to input in a language or a script selected by him at the time of registration.
Okay, so I think this is referring to which section? There'll be section 5.1.2? So Nisha, are you talking about 5.1.2?
No, it's about 5.1.1.
Oh, 5.1, okay, here, all right. Ah, this is a...
Under the...
What's your proposal is... your proposal is...
So what I'm saying is...
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Nisha.
Should I speak again? Okay. So what I'm saying is, here we have under the proposed requirement header of this point 5.1.1, we have specified that user should be able to input this in language or script appropriate for the region that it is located. So here do we need to clarify that how the restriction on inputting in particular language or script will be made with its region? Or we can say in other way that user should be able to input in language or script selected by him at the time of registration.
Okay. Sorry, Nita, I'm having a hard time hearing you. Do others hear Nishit okay? If so, could you repeat? Or Nishit, if you could type in the chat room again. I'm sorry to impose this on you. Type in the chat room or you know, send an email requirement. That would be much easier for me to incorporate than to summarize here.
Okay, I will.
So while Nishit types in the chat room, this is Jim, I actually had comment about 5.1.1 also, and I think it's related to what Nishit is saying. I didn't quite get the details, but he was talking about language or script as we recommend here. I was wondering if I thought the name was allowed to be free form as opposed to being required to be a language or script appropriate for the region. The address I remember specifically had to be appropriate for the region in which it was located. But maybe others should speak up here. I thought I remembered that the name, you know, was allowed to be freeform. I mean, obviously a language or a script would have to be indicated.
Right.
In the discussion, we would need to say something like, you know, it would only be limited by what the registrar happens to support. But anyway, that's my comment. Anyone else? So Steve, go ahead.
So this seems fine. I'm trying to understand the proposed requirement will be this data element. No requirement should be imposed on this field, right? Other than it needs to it should be a free-form text limited only by what registrar supports. By what language or script registrar supports?
Correct. That's what I think.
That's fine.
Yeah, when you say region, this is Jody, sorry, for the queue.
No, please, Jody, go ahead.
Yeah, when we say region in there, we're talking about the region that's actually entered into the address. But if I agree with you, Jim, because I think the registrant should be able, the person should be able to register in whatever language or script they want, regardless of the region that they are using for the address. If they want to be more global as a registrant, and they want to use a global language, then I'd say we allow them to do that, even if their region is not dependent on the region, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I mean, this is Jim. I'm thinking about two things. There are two examples in my mind when I say that it should be, you know, free form. One is a person of one, you know, nationality or culture, you know, could live anywhere. So
right.
Their name would be relative to where they were born. And then the other thing, of course, is there are multinational companies. Their name is going to be whatever the corporate name is, and they're going to use that wherever they happen to be located.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Jody, just one question, I guess, from your operational expertise here. In the registrar, so for example, you know, GoDaddy operates globally, and in that sense, you would accept name from any any script or any language from anywhere around the globe, right? Regardless where that registration take place.
Yeah, it would require changes in the registrar system to be able to do that, and maybe in the registry too. But I believe most registries will now allow you to put in any language or script you want into that registrant name. Now I'm not sure about that, but I think that that's something that we should check. I mean, this will put, if we're allowing people to do that or recommending that, this could put a pinch on registrars, because I think currently right now we will not allow customers to put in a script directly into the registrant name field other than Latin or U.S. ASCII, I should say.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah, this is what we're talking about here is definitely a big change for the registrars to support.
Okay. So I think any input from that end would be really helpful, the kind of the implication.
Yeah, the implication is going to be very big, I think, for a lot of registrars if they're not allowing scripts to be used besides U.S. ASCII. And that could be huge. I mean, the operational effort on that could be, you know, ranging to their databases and to what they're sending into the registry. Now, the WHOIS system will have to be changed to allow this also. I mean, the port 43 WHOIS, since it only allows U.S. ASCII. And I think that that's where we got into discussions of should this be translated or transliterated into you know, one single script of US ASCII, because I believe that that's all that is supported with port 43. Jim or Nishit, if you guys want to correct me there if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, so let me, you bring up a good point, and let me use this as a segue into the one, there was one comment that I had made in my reading that I thought was kind of substantive. And I don't know if you're displaying my version of the document here, Steve, or something else.
Displaying your version, yeah.
Okay, so if you go up into section four, I put in a third paragraph there.
Okay.
And this kind of gets to what Jody was just talking about. So let me sort of introduce this in the following way. It's right that if registrars are not, well, in technical terms, we always like to talk about 8-bit clean, but basically that means do they allow the input of Unicode characters? And then, of course, push that up into the registry. I mean, I know that for our registry, in fact, this business of taking in any language is really not an issue for us because our database and our registry and implementation is 8-bit clean, and we do support Unicode. Restrictions are all put in front of that to go along with current rules.
Right.
But for those who aren't there and haven't done that, you know, that would certainly be a change. But one of the things that I notice here, I sort of make this sentence in here, sort of along the lines of the user capability principle, should we be saying that, I think, should we explicitly state what Jody was just talking about? If we're going to say that a user should be able to use, or let's see, 2 years ago, the way the IRD working group had phrased it was that a user actually should have the ability, the right, if you will, to use their own language and not be obligated to do anything else. And should we say something about that? Because I think then that the next implication is that a registrar at a registry needs to be able to store whatever is coming through at a minimum. And then a minimum requirement is that it might have to be translated or transliterated for the directory services side of it, the WHOIS side of it. I mean, WHOIS doesn't support any of this, the protocol. But the WIRTS working group is developing a new system. And, of course, the EWG, the Expert Working Group on Directory Services, is proposing something entirely new and different. Anyway, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm rambling a little bit here. Have I said something useful that's helped Jody?
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, Jim. I guess what to your point of explaining some of this to the registrars, I think it's going to be useful and maybe a little more palatable to the registrars. Because I guess from a registrar standpoint, when I look at this, and I'm not sure where other registrars are, I'm explaining where GoDaddy is. Implementing something like this, if there are only based in U.S. ASCII, is going to be a pretty big overhaul for their systems. And it will be pretty hard for them to swallow as far as a recommendation coming out like this. So I think putting things in there or putting statements in there, realizing that this could be a pretty big change for the registrars and that, you know, registrars shouldn't change this until the WHOIS working group, or I'm not sure which one is responsible for creating the new WHOIS protocol to allow scripts to be used or to be returned on port 43. I mean, anything that when we suggest things in this document, this is not an edict for registrars to have to go out and change right away. That would have to come down from ICANN. Is that correct?
Right. So let me just respond to a couple process points here for you. We are an expert working group, and so we only make recommendations. Anything that we recommend would be subject to an additional process of some sort in order to be mandated to contracted parties. So the translate, by comparison, the translate transliteration working group is actually a PDP working group. So its work product actually becomes a requirement on contracted parties, or will become a requirement on contracted parties. And we're not in that place. Another possible path, of course, is that the ICANN board could decide that whatever we say is the right thing to do, but I suspect that they would always defer to a PDP. So there's one more step after our work. So that's one thing. The ICF WIRDS working group is developing or proposing a new protocol, which is basically using port 80. It's using a RESTful interface on port 80 to provide directory services, as opposed to the WHOIS protocol currently supported on port 43. And, of course, the advantage of all of that is what you pull in is everything you get from HTTP, right, the web protocol. So you get all of your language designations, your script designations. You pull in all kinds of authentication models and all of that, too. So you get to build on all of that. The implication here is that when the IETF working group is finished and has a protocol, the expectation is that ICANN will begin a process, and there are a couple of ways in which it might do this, but it will begin a process in which it will propose that that protocol is the new directory service protocol, and it will become a requirement on contracted parties.
Okay.
Existing agreements, the new registry agreements and registrar agreements, actually have a clause in them that allows for ICANN to update and say that this is the new protocol for use, and I believe it was 160 days. It was 180. I think it got reduced to 160 days, but it actually says that from the moment that ICANN says this is the new protocol, you have 160 days to implement and deploy the new protocol. Anyway, I think those are the moving parts. Does that all make sense?
Yes, thank you very much for the clarification, Jim.
But I do agree, I do actually think that it's important in this interim report that we call out kind of explicitly questions or comments or recommendations that are likely to be, shall we say, meaningful to certain parties, so that we can solicit feedback. We obviously, you know, we want to hear what people have to say. Even though our recommendations won't be binding right away, they're clearly on a path headed towards some version of them becoming binding, so people need to care about them.
Okay, thank you. So what I gather is I will update requirements in 5.1.1, you know, very similar to what Jim proposed. Now, Nishit has Nishit, actually, if we're not restricting to particular language and script to be made with this region, then for this, then it should not be an issue for you, right? Nishit was proposing the user will be able to input in a language or script selected by the user at the time of registration. It's also an interesting point. What do others think about this?
Well, I think, this is Jim, I mean, I think that's the point of our user capability principle, and it's,
right.
You know, it's also part of the corollary that I'm sort of proposing there in that third paragraph. The discussion point that we have to fill out a bit, I like to say it's limited by the registrar And it really is. I mean, a user can only go to a registrar that will allow the user to use the language and script the user wants to use. If the registrar doesn't accept it, then they have to find another registrar. I mean, in a sense, to say that in the opposite direction, internationalization obligates registrars to be prepared to interact with the users in the market in which they want to be deployed, right? The market they want to draw customers from.
Okay.
I'm trying to find a more neutral, less business-oriented way to say that, and that's kind of the point that I'm getting at here in my third paragraph.
Right. Okay.
See, Jim, I'm interested, and maybe this is a... I'm sorry, I guess I shouldn't interrupt you like this.
No, Jody, please, go ahead. All right.
I'm curious, and if I'm going down the wrong path here, and if you'd like to defer this, that's fine. I'm curious how this would affect, curious how Edmund and you would be affected by contact validation with different scripts. I know that contact validation is a big part of registries. You know, with different scripts, how would that affect the registry?
See, actually, as I understand the validation issue, it's not really a registry issue, it's a registrar issue.
Sorry to interrupt, Jim, but what I mean is that if I try to, as a registrar, if I try to register a domain name, the registry itself is going to validate, what do I want to say, it's going to validate those variables that sent in. For example, for a phone number, the registry is not going to allow a phone number to be blank. So there are definitely rules around an address to say, does an address have one character or two characters, or how many characters do there need to be for this to be to allow the domain to be registered? Not saying that you're verifying the actual address exists, but you're verifying the format or validating the format. So with a different script, how does that affect the registry?
Okay, so let's divide up this validation question into three parts, right? ESAC had a document in which they talked about validation, and we carefully divided the validation problem up into three parts. There's syntactic validation, operational validation, and identity validation. So syntactic validation, I would expect both registries and registrars to have to implement. Registries will do it because they do have to double-check the registrar. Registrars will have to do it because they need to get the right information from a registrar. So they're the first line of defense, right?
Definitely.
And that's all about I would expect syntactic validation could be automated. In fact, this is the way ESAC presented it. It could be automated pretty much all of the time. The expectation is that that's something that could be done automatically as part of your programming. And it refers to all the things that you're talking about. Does the phone number really look like a phone number? Is it a real phone number? Is the email address, does it look like an email address? That kind of thing. Is an address got the right number of characters? In terms of some of the requirements we're putting up here for an address, I would imagine you could also check that the address is in a script or language that's valid for the region in which it's located, those kinds of things. Operational validation is a little bit different. I wouldn't expect operational validation to fall on a registry at all. Operational validation refers to, is the value that you have, does it work? So a phone number, can you call it and does somebody answer? An email address, can I send it a notice and, you know, get a reply, for example? For a physical address, do I have some reference by which I can state to some level of confidence that it represents a real physical location? All of those things would be operational validation. That's a lot of the validation problem that's being talked about in the ICANN context, right? That's the validation problem that scares everybody. And, you know, if I were a registrar, it would scare me too. Because you can't physical validation of, or let's see, validation of a physical address is relatively straightforward in many countries. Take the U.S. for example, and very challenging in many other countries. I think China and even Japan fall into that category, notwithstanding some of your underdeveloped countries like, you know, Africa and certain parts of India, for example. So I don't know where all that's going to go. Identity validation is taking all of the data elements that you have and confirming that they actually represent a physical embodiment of an organization or a person. And that typically involves a manual process, some third-party thing which is going to have to go out and make sure that all the parts fit together. If I call the phone number, is it really the person who claims to be at the other end of the phone? So having given that, I think the answer to your question is syntactic validation, you know, registries are going to do that just like registrars. Operational validation, registrars will have to do some of that. And that's where all of the new requirements are now being developed and stated. There are some things in the new registrar agreements that push people in a certain direction, push certain registrars in a certain direction. As far as I know, there's no one with specific identity validation requirements right now. Some new TLDs have them, but they're not part of ICANN's general requirements. So is that helpful?
It is. The only part that I was concerned about, that I was asking about or curious about, was the syntactics, the syntactic validation. And it sounds like registries already handle that, and it doesn't matter the script that's sent in.
Well, handle, it's a relative term. Some of it you inherit from the XML that's used in EPP, right? So you get some of the syntactic validation there. Other things are a little more semantic than syntactic, and so you're going to have to do some coding to check them, you know, like the email address, the details of the email address. Does it really conform to an internationalized address? Right now, we don't, you know, for example, in our registry, we don't allow an internationalized email address. It has to be, the local part has to be, you know, ASCII and at sign and then and IDN. So this is a new requirement here that even we would have to do, and I'm sure others will have the same problem. But that's, that kind of syntax is above what XML gives you.
Okay. And I think from a paper or a suggestion that we're trying to do, I think it's important to state, you know, that this may be difficult for registrars and registries to implement, and that this should be, you know, how do I want to say this? To make sure we're pointing out that we know that this is not easy to be changed. What we're suggesting could be difficult for registrars or registries to implement, or not difficult, but could take a lot of work.
I agree with you, Jody, and my suggestion for how we word this, Steve, is. What we want to do is tell people to evaluate the work effort that may be required to make this change, especially if their current implementation is U.S. ASCII-based.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not prejudge whether people think it's easy or hard, even though it probably is hard. So did you get that, Steve?
No, sorry.
The comment about there are going to be specific places in here where we know we're making suggesting changes from the status quo, mm-hmm. and in those places where we currently expect that things are implemented based on U.S. ASCII only.
Mm-hmm.
We should encourage registries and registrars in particular, but everyone, to consider the difficulty of changing their implementations to support more than just U.S. ASCII.
Understand. This is almost like a specific section called implications for these proposed requirements, right? And then you have implement potential implications to registrars and the difficulty in my face and to registries like that. That's how I, you know, was thinking about this. Instead of having it bits and pieces everywhere in the document, let's put it in one section so that this will immediately call people's attention for them to dive into this.
So let me suggest that we have a section called implementation notes rather than implications. So implementation notes.
Implementation notes. I'm happy to write that, but I would really need points from Jody and, you know, who else? I didn't have any other registrars. And then from Jim, from you, from Naoki, and who are on the registry side, so that I can to be able to write these implementation notes. Would you be able to help?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think right now we have one implementation note to make.
Right.
Which is, you know, to observe that changing from U.S. ASCII to allow any language or script certainly is going to require a change to many parts of an implementation.
Noted. I will reach out to you and Jody and who others want separately to fill out this section, because it goes to an area that I don't know, so I really need to rely on you to tell me what are these issues just so that I can write them down. Okay, but I note your point, Jim.
Yeah. Let me suggest that when you reach out to us, you actually send the message to the mailing list so that we keep everyone involved, but you can address it in the beginning to, you know, any one of us if you want a specific person to comment on something, so that others can comment too.
Sure.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
This is Takao.
Go ahead.
So I just want to confirm. So the way we're trying to go is to suggest or, you know, go towards rewriting the backend. But do we have a thought about potentially just trying to keep the existing backend and then, you know, do something like the way it's done with IDN implementation? I don't think that's the case, but I'm just asking. In other words, using a puny code, for instance, and then that allow the all the backends to stay as is, right? And then just wondering if there's any direction that potentially hit that way. I don't think that's the case, but I'm just checking.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, Takao. So this is Jim again. I make the observation that domain names have a special concern because the DNS is you need something in a normalized form in order to do DNSSEC and DNS signing.
Totally.
I'm sorry?
I totally agree, yep.
So there is this requirement to have both an A label and a U label.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the name itself for presentation purposes and the way it's visible to a user, of course, would be the U-label version, but you need the A-label version internally in order to put it into your DNS servers and also to do all of your DNSSEC signing and such. So you have the requirement there to always have both versions of it or have one of them and always be able to create the other one when you need it. That was actually a question that I had in the document here about domain name. Should we always require that both come in, or should we require one of them and be clear about that? Or maybe we don't have to require either one, but we have to observe that there has to be a value that could be mapped one way or the other. But that's different than everything else. I'm not sure, honestly, about other things, and I think that's a question that we need to continue to think about, and maybe we want to ask as part of our interim report, if I get an address, you know, should I be required to have it in two forms, the local form and whatever standard form I want to create? Then I would also offer that, isn't that a question for the translation, transliteration, PDP working group to answer?
No, I was like a more really thinking about, you know, from the, like what Jody mentioned, right? The, just, you know, this is a big task for everyone, and then having some sort of like a, you know, that might be, solution, but realizing that you know we talked about the email address and so forth. So I don't think that's really a realistic or anything, but it may worth like a noting that we, you know, thought about it. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Takao. What you are really getting at is where this internationalization happens. Is it kind of pushed to the, you know, to the end, or is it happened more towards the core? That's how I interpret your question with regard to implementation. Thank you for that point.
Question.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So a question is Takao asking about when or where with respect to internationalization?
Where, right? Because you could store everything back-end as Punicode or anything, and then you rely on applications to do transformation, right, to do localization. So everything...
Correct, except that the Punicode, I don't think Punicode works, so...
Anyway,
yes. If it's
okay.
Unclear, I'm gonna follow up with that writing.
Yeah, please.
Thank you.
Jim, we are 10 minutes to the hour. How do you want to wrap up the call and next steps?
All right, so we've had some really good discussion. You've certainly gathered up some good points. You had some editorial suggestions for the document. I guess one action we need is a revised document to look at.
Okay.
Sure. Let me ask Steve. Our goal here is to try to get an interim report out prior to Singapore. What deadlines are we facing so that you know, gets into the ICANN process in a sensible way?
Jim, I think the Singapore publication deadline is early March, so we're looking at 2 weeks, so probably two cycles, two more review cycles.
Okay, so two more meetings. All right. Let me ask that you confirm that and get an actual date for it so we know.
Okay.
I think our goal at the moment is to get this document in a place where we can share it so that we can begin to gather some comments. I guess this means putting it out for a 30-day comment period. Is there a standard for how long this interim report comment period should be, Steve?
The minimum is 21 day, and then followed by a 21-day reply period. So that's 42 days. But if we want to, we can. It's really up to the working group. I mean, if the working group wants comments to be 40 days, that's fine. But that 21 days is usually the absolute minimum.
Right. right? So they're saying 3 weeks. What I'm wondering about is, I guess I'm just being cautious in my mind about whether or not we'll be moving forward while we're waiting for comments to come in, you know, what work we're going to have. But I guess we'll figure that out when it happens. I don't know that I have a strong opinion right now about how long the comment period should be. I think my first gut reaction is keeping it short. So I would go with the 3 weeks and 3 week reply period. Unless there's some particular motivation for making it longer, if anybody has any particular suggestions. I guess if we release it before Singapore, we should probably make the comment period 30 days, because the week of the ICANN meeting is not really a fair week to expect people to do things.
Yeah. Jim, the deadline is March 3rd for Singapore publications.
So we really only have next week, so we have one more meeting available to us. And that'll give you a few days to polish off the documents and then get it submitted.
Yes. If we want to submit it by this time, then I will really need input from everybody. So that, you know, for example, I will require request people to read it through once again and just trying to identify anything that is not clear. Because I mean, this is going to be looked very critically by the community, right? And anything that is not clearly stated would really, you know, diminish the work here. And also, the implementation note section is really critical to get it right. So I would really rely on you to make those right, if we're going to try to aim for meeting. Yeah.
Okay, so let's. Can we get a revised document from you by Friday?
Yes.
And
you mean with the implementation note section?
Whatever you have,
okay,
put together,
sure.
and make it available, and then it's on the rest of us to read this document and provide any additional text that it needs, clarification,
mm-hmm.
so that we can have a final review next Wednesday.
Okay.
And then you can polish it off and publish it as an interim, you know, draft report for discussion.
Sure.
I'm sure that anything we don't get exactly right, people will be quick to tell us, so
mm-hmm.
it won't be a problem.
Agreed.
Yeah, we'll get it right the next time around.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm just thinking about what John Clinton is going to respond to this report. So that's the kind of criticality
yep.
that I'm thinking about. All right.
That's okay. I'd rather get, you know, critical comments on an interim report, because then we actually have a very real chance of, you know, of doing something more solid that people will respect a little better the next time around. I don't want to be too far wrong if I can help it, but there you go.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
I asked one question in my note about whether or not we want to ask the translation and transliteration working group if we want to pass on to them our user capability principle and ask for their comments about that. Tell them this is sort of, we're headed down this path, giving them that heads up. They meet on Thursday, so I'll be in that meeting tomorrow. And I'm wondering if people have any comments about whether or not I should bring to that group our principle of user capability for their consideration. Any comments? Well, both for and against. I don't think I'm going to jump to doing that if people don't think that's a good thing to do. or we can wait and talk about it some more. And so maybe I'll pose this question more directly in the mailing list and see if we get some discussion, and I won't do anything about this tomorrow. Okay, so I think we have an action plan, and we've kind of wrapped up today. Any other business from anyone? Nothing? Okay, then let me turn it over to you, Steve, to wrap us up.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for the call today. An action item is I will take the input received on this call and produce a revised version of the document by Friday this week. I will probably reach out to some of you individually and then confirm that on the mailing list, the discussions we have, particularly with respect to the implementation note section. So those are the, and then by next week, we will, our next meeting is going to do a final review of this document. So between Friday and next Wednesday, urge the working group members to look this at this document critically. And then we will meet next week to review it. Okay, that's all I have. And operator, could you stop the recording?
Recording has been stopped.
Thank you. And good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Thank you again.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.